And our next special guest, Brad Steiger, we'll talk about him in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Award-winning writer Brad Steiger just passed away just a few weeks ago. He was an expert in the hidden, the unusual, and the secret mysteries.
For decades, award-winning writer Brad Steiger has been devoted to exploring and examining very unusual, hidden, secret, and other strange occurrences. Brad grew up in a home where ghostly phenomena was a common occurrence. He and his wife just completed another one of their many books. This one, Real Aliens, Space Beings and Creatures from Other Worlds. I'm glad to introduce Brad Steiger back to Coast to Coast. Hey, Brad, how are you?
I'm fine, George. Great to be back with you.
You too. This was very complete, comprehensive, and I got to tell you, riveting. Every story, from the first one to the last one, I couldn't put it down.
Thank you so much for saying that. That is exactly what we sought to do. And the reviews have been so rewarding. They've come from people who have been in the field as long as I have, and people who have just always wondered about this mystery. And they've all said, you know, that this is complete. And what we tried to do is to take each chapter as a mini history of that particular type of report of alien beings. So we start with the modern era, which, you know, you and I both know that this phenomenon is as old as humankind.
That's right.
But we start with the modern era, which we kind of have a loose consensus, 1947, and then build up to the very present, which would be last summer when we had to go to press.
Well, I'm telling you, you know, we've all over the years have read or have heard of various UFO stories.
Right.
But this is the first time I've seen all of these cases that we're so familiar with or cases that we didn't even know about compiled in one book where they're all there. And I found that to be fascinating. I even got a kick out of the section of Buzz Aldrin, second man to walk on the moon during Apollo 11, where you had him and described his appearance on the Larry King show, of which I was on. I was sitting in that group, and Buzz just went on and on and on about the spacecraft and this and that. And, you know, Larry is biting his fingers going, tell me, did you see a UFO or not? And he'd say, and then we saw this thing and this piece of spacecraft fly by, and everybody was looking at each other while Buzz went on, and you picked that up perfectly.
Well, you know, if you look up anticlimactic in the dictionary, you're going to get Buzz Aldrin's story. I mean, that was classic. It was classic. You know, it was like a little comedy routine or something. But, you know, what we have there are so many reports, and people change their minds, but they do make reports. Sometimes they say, well, I didn't really mean it was a UFO or it was an alien and so forth. We're not making any judgments in this book. We are simply recounting so that there's a, if I may say so, it's like an encyclopedia of alienology in our lifetime and projecting it. We do have the chapters, as you know, and I know you're very much into this particular aspect of ancient times and our prehistory and religion. We do have chapters dealing with that, but we take, you know, from the quote-unquote little green man and explain where that nomenclature came from, and then the blonde Nordics, the grays, and so forth. And we just try to present what is going on in a way that would be exciting and informative to the person reading the book. Not that we want any particular pre-digested decision to come from anyone. We want people to have an access to this, to understand. Because again, when you get to be in your mid-70s and you've been in this field since you know, I was 11 years old when Roswell took
time,
place.
That's right.
Yeah, yeah. And been working that long, you do tend to have a perspective that maybe someone just coming new to the field might not have. And then adding that to Sherry's research and her experiences and her studies, And thank you for all the nice things you're saying about it. I really appreciate
it. Well, you and Sherry deserve it. Tell me about the story of Epsilon Butes. Now, this is an incredible story that a lot of people might not be aware of what very well could be an alien object that is circling our moon.
You know, I'm so intrigued by that. And you picked up on it when it first came out. I could not imagine why people weren't going wild about this. But here is a broadcast, so to speak, and sometimes we theorize that maybe there's like, I don't know what kind of device it'd be, but some type of tape recorder in the heavens that keeps broadcasting messages. But here, and serious-minded astronomers said, you know, this is coming from a source. It's coming from something that, you know, is circling. It is in an orbit, and it is broadcasting meaningful messages. Now, and then it just disappeared from the stories. And I tried to track it down and get more information, and then I don't like to project thoughts like this, and sometimes we get a little weary of saying, oh, it must be a cover-up. But I could not understand that this could really be anything other than some kind of cover-up with this information, and there must have been more that would be released and that we reported in the book. That alien contact, it seems as though someone was telling us, you know, we're here and we're available, so to speak, for communication. And then there was nothing else.
And this object apparently was parked around our moon about, what, 13,000 years ago?
Yeah, this is what the communication claimed, that it had been parked there like it was kind of an overseer. Like it was, that was its mission to say when we were ready enough to receive this information.
Well, it would still be there in orbit, right?
Yes. That's what I understand, but I haven't been able to get any more information about it. There was a lot at first, and I tried to track it down at the time, and then it just dried up, and I couldn't get anyone else to answer. But, you know, I'm stubborn. And, you know, Sherry says, yes, I agree with you. We've got to put this in the book.
Yeah, maybe. It's a great story.
If people get excited about it, you know, some additional statements from someone who should know will be forced to make these statements and explain what happened.
Well, and if it's still broadcasting something, we should have SETI point its ears that way somewhere.
Yes, indeed. And I can't believe that it isn't pointed there. But I can't get any more information. Maybe someone with a higher ranking than Sherry or myself can. And I'm hoping that people will see this, someone with that kind of influence, and demand that we say, what has happened to Epsilon Butes?
When you put this book together with Sherry, you must have concluded that there are a lot of UFO reports out there, and they're good ones. Something's happening on this planet.
Oh, they're...
You have to conclude that.
Okay, first of all, no disagreement from you. It's a great mystery.
It is.
Some people feel they have the answer. And they're very aloof about that. And they're very supercilious, saying we have the answer. As long as we have been in this research field, we realize that it's a multi-level phenomenon. It's a multi-level, multi-dimensional phenomenon. We know something is going on. We don't know if it's extraterrestrial, if it's multi-dimensional. We don't know, though I kind of suspect there might be bases under the sea. There might be bases under Earth to account for some of the ancient legends. But the phenomena has been with us forever. And we feel that it influences every aspect of our existence in ways that we haven't even begun to dream of yet. We feel that strongly about it, that whatever the phenomena is, and we're not saying they come from Alpha Centauri, we're not saying they come from the hollow Earth, we're simply saying consider all of this as a great mystery, a multi-layered mystery, but something is going on.
Brad, why do you think at such a young age, you, me, and so many other people became fascinated with stories of UFOs and extraterrestrial life? What happened to us?
Well, I think as the eminent philosopher Lady Gaga says, we were just born that way.
Maybe so. Maybe so.
I have to bring up one thing. I got excited about Upsilon Buddhis, which is a favorite of mine. Some people like to play the name game with research, and I think we cannot overlook that the British astronomer who made the discovery of this robot satellite was named Duncan Lunan.
How about that?
So again, moon, it's beside the moon. So those little things kind of add spice to research.
You know, we continue to get these UFO reports and stories all over the place. Yet there are some people who truly believe government's going to disclose. I don't think so, and I've told them that. What do you think?
I don't either. I've said that, I think, as long as I've been researching with in writing, I should say, which goes back to the 50s and the first book in the 66 about UFOs. I've said then, it's not going to. And people say, well, they can't keep a secret. Oh, yeah, they can. I mean, but we have, and talking about this not long ago with Kevin Randall, whom I know is aware of his fine research, and continually finding people making deathbed, I hate to use the word confession, testimony.
Sure.
Deathbed testimony.
They just want to get it off their chest.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, I can't see why someone has kept it secret all of their lives and then on their deathbed would want to leave that as part of their legacy. So it seems we're building up to a time of disclosure. But I really am not optimistic about this coming anytime soon. I know our friends in the exopolitical side of it, they're very enthusiastic, and we hear from them regularly and respect all of their research and what they're trying to do. And, you know, they're optimists, and I try to be a cockeyed optimist as much as possible. So I'm hopeful that we will have some sort of great revelation, but I'm just not terribly optimistic that it'll happen in our lifetime, anyway.
Yeah, unless it's a mistake.
A mistake
or something like that happens.
Good one, George.
Let's go to the phones. David in Pleasant Hills, California, west of the Rockies. David, go ahead. You're on with Brad Steiger.
Hey, George. Hey, Brad. How you doing tonight?
Oh, okay, George.
Good.
What was your name?
David.
I'm David.
David. Okay, David.
Yeah, how's your own? Yeah, I had a couple people that I've been kind of researching lately. I've seen a few YouTube videos. It's all over the internet with stuff like what John Lear has talked about. One of the big ones is Stephen Greer and the that congressional. I think it was a congressional hearing that he was trying to get going as far as disclosure goes. Things like one thing I wanted to say though is I don't think we'll ever see disclosure because. As far as I know, the Bilderberg group is being controlled by the Greys. And as far as that's going on, as far as all that secrecy and these destructive agendas are going on, we're not going to see anything come out in the open.
Let's hypothesize about this, Brad. You know, this group, the Illuminati, the Bilderbergs, these people, you think they're being controlled by ETs? I would say not. I think they just don't want us to know because they're afraid they will lose control of us.
Yes. No, I don't. One stays open, as I certainly have to do, and you certainly have to do, George.
Yeah.
Stay open to all. And, you know, I'm open to that type of comment, but I think the Bilderbergers, Illuminati, and all of that particular, which we're working on the second edition of our conspiracy book now, and I heard you do a little blurb with Jesse at the beginning there.
Yeah.
So there's a lot to write about conspiracies. We're just being overwhelmed trying to keep up with that. But again, the caller agrees that there's probably not going to be disclosure as far as groups being controlled by ETs or aliens or multidimensionals, whatever. That I think the whole field has and can have a certain paranoid aspect to it. And I think we have to be aware of that. I've seen so many friends since I began kind of lose it, who were serious researchers, got in a little too deeply, felt that they really had insight into the truth. And then, sad to say, many of them suffered mental issues and
yeah, that happens.
I won't go on, but it's a field. And I told Sherry before we really got into this strong again, it's like entering a magic theater in one sense. And I said, things are going to happen, because when I was really into it in the 60s and the 70s, things that just beggared normal, sensible descriptions happened. And when we really got into it, those strange, unexplainable, mysterious things happen. And you get information from many sources, and then things are, you just have to watch a very cautious line. There's something about entering this field that you have to stay balanced. You really have to know yourself. And that's why we maintain that a time of meditation, a time of prayer, a time of reading from the Holy Scriptures of all faiths. I think you have to have that kind of balance. And it's a field we are convinced, and I'll say it again, it's the great mystery that affects all of us.
Oh, it sure is.
You know, so many ways.
What fascinates me too, Brad, these stories of submersible UFOs.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
They pop out of the ocean. They're witnessed by sailors and people on boats, ships. Truly incredible stuff.
Marvelous stuff. And get those stories we receive all the time, you know, from shrimp fishermen and other fishermen and military men, Navy men, and so forth, who write us with their reports.
Can you imagine being on a boat and you see a UFO smash itself out of the water and just take off?
Well, we stood on a shore of a lake in Peru and saw that happen at least a dozen times in one night.
Yeah.
No explanation Remarkable. What we were really seeing, but we all knew what it looked like we were seeing.
Anything going back in or just going out?
No, they go out, too. They would come
in and out,
dive, then go out, and almost like they were putting on a
show for us. Let's go to Clearwater, Florida. Scott, east of the Rockies. Hi, Scott. Go ahead.
Good evening. They were putting a show on for you, Brad. They knew that you'd be watching, so they put on a little play.
You know, okay. All right.
You can't figure out what these things are, but I figured it out when I first heard about, you know, the UFOs. Actually, you know, they're supernatural. I don't know why you don't want to actually say they're supernatural. You say they're multidimensional, but you can't really, you kind of stay away from saying they're actually supernatural.
I don't think you've read many of my books, have you?
I haven't. I've never read any of your books, Brad.
Well, then you would know that I began speaking of the supernatural aspect back in the 60s, much to the dismay of my fellow researchers.
And, you know, I still think a lot of people will say they're dimensional, they're demonic.
Mm-hmm.
I still think they're coming from planetary systems within our galaxy.
Well, you cannot deny that as a workable theory, but as we said, it's such a multi-layered theory. And certainly the spiritual or the supernatural, people always, that's kind of a knee-jerk word for a lot of people, but I think we understand what we mean when I say that. That aspect of another dimension, another world, another supernatural, whatever you define that, because there are so many similarities between UFO phenomena, aliens, and ghosts.
Brad Steiger, another one who will be missed. We'll be back with a final guest who has passed on. And welcome back. Bob Mitchell was a Canadian author and journalist who turned his attention from sports
to writing about UFOs.
And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. So back in 2001, I just started filling in on Coast to Coast, and the John Teeter time traveler story was just really getting going. So what we're going to be talking about over the course of the next couple hours is the John Teeter story. We're going to have several guests. Bob Mitchell will be with us this hour. Next hour, Jason Quitt, Bob's co-author and Disclosed Chronicles of John Teeter II, will join us. And also sometime this hour, John Teeter will join us. Now, Bob Mitchell, of course, is a Canadian author, journalist. He's covered crime and sports for the Toronto Star for more than 35 years. He's also a field investigator for MUFON based in Ontario and an executive with MUFON Canada. Bob is also the co-founder of the Toronto News Wire Service, and here he is on Coast to Coast back with us. Bob, good to have you with us.
Thanks, George, and it's a pleasure to be able to introduce to the world the real John Teeter II.
Oh, my God, what a story. You can't wait to get into this.
And it's not the John Teeter that people knew about in 2000. He has nothing to do with that person. I think all his predictions never came true, and the way he time traveled, on the back of a Chevy Corvette, which was very similar to the movie Back to the Future.
Back to the Future, yeah.
It just smelled right from the beginning, and it did cause some concern to the real John Teeter the second, and that's what we called him, John Teeter the second, and you can't time travel with a car. The only way you can time travel is through a spaceship.
You are in a battle, one heck of a personal battle, aren't you?
Yeah. It came up very, very suddenly. I guess 3 weeks ago now, I was diagnosed with pancreatic and liver cancer, and right out of the blue. So I'm on medication, and I get pretty tired, but I'm certainly not giving up the fight. I'm so thankful that I have a very supportive family. My kids, my wife has been a rock through this, and I'm also very thankful for all the people that I've met on the last 3 years through my UFO writing books, and particularly Jason Quitt, because had I not met Jason, I'd probably be under chemo right now.
Yeah.
And yet Jason opened me up to a whole new world of Tesla medicine, healing, technologies that I had no idea even existed.
Well, you're in our prayers, my friend. And
thank you, George.
And keep our fingers crossed.
And I'm just, it's too bad it happened at the time when this book was coming out, because, I haven't had the energy that I had 3 weeks ago. But I'm looking forward to the launch, which is actually today, and this is the first show that's ever had John Teeter on.
Somebody reportedly called Art, back in 2001, but as you say, it might not have been the John Teeter.
No, it definitely wasn't. I mean, this John Teeter had, people have to understand that time travel is an actual thing that the United States government basically has hidden from the public for maybe 70 years. They've been doing it since the late 70s, and John was the head of the time travel division of an elite unit in the United States Air Force, and his command actually went from 2030 to 2036. He never actually lived any life at all in the early, 80s, 90s. It was all in the future, and he decided to come back and live here because he had a love interest, who was one of the time travelers.
Okay, we're going to bring him in a few moments, and we're going to chat with him about this incredible journey of his. But tell us, Bob, how did you get in touch with him? How did this happen?
Well, when Jason and I went on many shows with for Forbidden Knowledge, our book that has been a sensation around the
right.
world, one of the questions we always kept getting asked was, do we know John Teeter? And originally we didn't, and we kept telling people, well, Jason's not a physical time traveler like he was. He's an astral time traveler, and they're completely different. And then when we finally met John Titor, we couldn't tell anybody that we had, because we had this interesting book planned, and we didn't want to let anybody know until it was really ready to go. But essentially, Jason got on the internet and looked up every John Titor he could find, and it clicked.
And he found him, huh?
Found him, and I think his first conversation with him lasted about 4 hours.
Jeez.
And then I got talked to him, I think, the next day, and mine lasted about the same time. And when we were writing the book, we thought we were writing a book about time traveling,
mm-hmm.
and John's experiences. But it soon became clear to us that we were actually writing a book that was going to disclose things that Hillary will never disclose, even if she admits that the aliens exist. So it almost became our goal to be the disclosure writers. And I think that's what we've done. We've presented a whole pile of stuff that some people are going to say, well, I always knew that was the truth, and now that here's confirmation. There's going to be other people who say, oh, that's a bunch of crap. And then there's going to be a whole pile of people in the middle that are now going to be shocked out of their wits, and in some points of the book are going to be scared out of their wits, because the United States also has the ability to change the timeline.
Now, Bob, what was it about this John Titor that convinced you or still makes you believe that he's a real deal?
Well, we did, I don't know how many interviews, but we did them on Skype so we could see each other.
Yeah.
And John never backed down or declined. He told us right up front that there were some things he wasn't going to be allowed to tell us. And that was fine, because we didn't know what we were going to be told. But when he started telling us stuff, it was more like he was remembering things that he had gone through rather than making things up. It was just an easy flow of conversation. He's a very jovial person. He's not in good health. And he just comes across as a sincere person. And at the same time, he seemed compelled that this book had to come out at least before September 30th. And then he called us up one day and said, it needs to come out September 1st. And because things are happening in the background that they're not nice. There's things happening with Russia and Iran that are speeding up the timeline.
And he already knows what's going to happen, doesn't he?
He knows what's going to happen, and he's concerned that the timeline has been changed again, even from what is written in the book.
Well, now, this first John Titor that would post on bulletin boards, on the artbell.com website, that person even called this show. How did that person know to call himself John Titor and all that if the original John Titor had not been disclosed yet? I'm curious. How did that happen?
Yeah, that was one of the questions we tried to figure out. And it may seem like a flippant answer, but I think the original John Titor was John Titor. And you have to understand, and I don't think I'm going to ruin the book for anybody, because it's right in the first prologue, that John Titor...
You're saying the initial John Titor, who was posting things, was this guy that we're going to talk to?
No. I'm saying that the name John Titor probably belonged to that original guy. But when our John Titor was... training at Belsey Base, that's where he did all his training for the time traveling to begin. He woke up one day as a 27-year-old, and had memories of past, of his past childhood and where he went to school and everything like that. And he was in a group of people that had similar memories.
How are you feeling? You're holding up okay?
Yeah, I'm holding up okay, but, you know, it's 1 o'clock or 1:30 our time here in Toronto, so
it's a late, late time for you.
For now it is.
All right.
What I was saying before the break is that when John woke up in Dulce that morning, he didn't know at the time, but he was one of probably 1,000 cloned super soldiers. And later on in life, when he found out who he was and what he was, it didn't change who he, his personality, or it didn't affect him at all, because he considered himself to be just as human as anybody else. But when I asked him about the name, the only thing he can think of is that when they were trying to name people, somebody had a sense of humor. And said, well, let's just call him John Teeter. And because I guess they had known the first John Teeter, because this John Teeter actually became the probably the top super soldier in the entire program.
Well, let's bring John in. And, Bob, feel free to jump in anytime you want.
Absolutely.
An incredible story. John Teeter, and, of course, this is a story that was going around back around 2000, 2001, that he had entered the Air Force as an airman in the U.S. Air Force at Dulce, New Mexico, and was a time traveler. He commanded the 177th Time Travel Division, and here he is, John Teeter. John, welcome to the program, and it's so good to hear you.
Thank you for having me on.
Hey, John, how you doing?
I'm good.
John, I've got a million questions to ask you. We're not going to have enough time, but let us begin at the beginning. This person, this other person claiming to be John Teeter, back around 2000, 2001, was that you or not?
No, and I think it's more misinformation than anything else. And I've wondered if it was deliberate. But one of the issues that I have had with the name, someone picked that name and gave it to me. And there was I was part of a four-member team, two males, two female. And essentially what went on at Dulce, New Mexico was bioresearch, cloning technology. And that technology was given to the U.S. government by gray aliens.
Now, when you say, John, that this was given to you, I mean, do you have any recollection of your childhood or anything like that?
Oh, they can implant memories in you. They can be whatever they want them to be. Most recently, the military of Iran has come out and said that they have proof that our president, Barack Obama, is a clone. Now, they also said that several of our presidents were cloned. And at the beginning of Barack Obama's first year in office, there were numerous death threats and plots to kill him. And there is nothing to say that one of the plots didn't succeed.
In your opinion, who are you?
I'm pretty sure that the genes that they used were from somebody else that had lived before. But that, more than that, I don't know. And I would not have known even that, if a gray alien hadn't told me.
Now, this episode in Dulce, New Mexico, are we talking about the year 2036?
No. This is the 1970s, and it was a bioweapons lab there, and what had happened was that the U.S. government had signed agreements not just with the grays, but with the tall whites and the reptilians.
But you are, though, in your opinion, you're a time traveler.
Among other things, yes. A member of the U.S. Air Force and retired, and a time traveler, oh, yes.
All right, from the year 2036, when we've always been told that is the year that you came back to our time period, is that accurate?
In 2036, I completed my last mission and basically retired from the Air Force at that time.
How did you get back to this time period?
I used a TR-3B to travel in time. And TR-3Bs, you can find the specs on the internet. They've been around since the late 70s. It's based on alien technology. The U.S. Air Force probably has at least two dozen that are ready to go all the time. I noticed the other day there was a video clip of Air Force One being escorted.
Right.
Not less than two TR-3Bs.
And the TR-3B was what the Phoenix Lights were too, right, John?
Based on that technology, that was an even bigger ship that Fife Symington saw.
Yes.
Yeah. And that was designed to be interstellar and to actually go to new Earth colonies.
Six losses, and there have been many, many more. Jimmy Church in tomorrow. I'll be back Memorial Monday night. Don't forget, for Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Greg Bishop, Stephanie Smith, Chris Boros, and George Knapp. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.